The following program is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. This evening, we continue our Bringing America Back to Life series. Tonight, we will feature a presentation from our 2024 convention. Our speakers' ideas will inspire you with principles, experiences, and wisdom as they join us to pave the way back to life through prayer, action, voting, and education. I am pleased to introduce Dr. William Lyle, former OBGYN department chair at Sacred Heart Hospital, who was an instructor with both the University of Florida and Florida State School OBGYN residency program. He is also a medical advisor for the Florida Human Life Protection Amendment and serves as a member of Focus on the Family's Physician Research Council. As a doctor and educator passionate about the personhood of the unborn, his expertise in the medical field, coupled with his bold faith, has informed his entire career. In 1999, Dr. Lyle and a partner bought out the practice of the largest provider of abortion services in Pensacola, Florida. That was the beginning of Lyle's venture into what has become somewhat of a second career, providing education on abortion procedures for the pro-life and Christian communities through speaking appearances as well as articles and videos hosted online at prolifedoctor.org. Dr. Lyle worked with the United States Council of Catholic Bishops to produce God's Miracle of Life, a 60-minute DVD that includes bloodless demonstrations of common abortion procedures and argues for the sanctity of life on scientific, legal, and scriptural grounds. Dr. Lyle is a frequent guest of both television and syndicated radio shows. He is available for seminars to churches, schools, civic organizations, and legislative groups.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for coming out here on a Saturday morning. I'm thrilled to be here. This is an honor. I practice obstetrics and gynecology. I'm board certified in obstetrics and gynecology, licensed to practice medicine in Florida and Alabama. I've been an instructor with the University of Florida and Florida State University, but this is where I really love to be, and that is in providing you new tools that you can use to defend God's preborn in the womb. So we're going to kick over to this morning's presentation, and we're going to be talking about patients' rights. Guys? All right. So, not many things get the opportunity to be born in an abortion clinic, except for this ministry. This ministry was born in an abortion clinic. It was 1999. I had just finished my residency program with the University of Florida, and the practice we took over was this practice. This was the largest abortion clinic on the Florida Panhandle. We approached the abortionist that was there, and we purchased the practice from him. We had him sign a 2-year restrictive covenant, a non-compete, where he couldn't practice any medicine for the next 2 years. Day one, we stopped all abortions, and we stopped all abortion referrals. And it was on a Sunday afternoon after church when I had a key to my new practice. And I went to the practice, and I actually went through the front door. I went upstairs, which is where the abortion clinic was, and I'll never forget on a Sunday afternoon going up this set of stairs, and I couldn't think about how many thousands upon thousands of women had walked up that set of stairs with a baby on the inside, made a turn up there at the left, and they went over to where the abortion machine and the exam table and all the instruments. They walked up one set of stairs, baby in the womb. They went down the other set of stairs without that baby in their womb. This is on the same road as Pensacola Christian College. 1,000-member churches here. The cathedral is just a few blocks away. And yet this was operating 6 days a week throughout since in the late 1970s until we took it over in 1999. It was when we got up to the top. You ever been somewhere and you said, there's just an evil presence here? There was an evil presence there. There was an evil presence there, and I saw all that equipment. I said, my God, how is there nobody even out front here on the sidewalk? So we made a commitment that we were going to use this equipment and we were going to teach and we were going to train. We did a presentation at my church, then another church, and now my wife and I, Leslie, are on the road. Oh, I still have a full-time practice. I was delivering babies on Wednesday before we flew up here. But we are on the road about 40 events out of state each year while we still have a full-time practice. But this is our ministry and this is our goal. Tonight, Molly has tasked me with an important thing. For today only, at Bringing America Back to Life, we're going to introduce you to the Bringing Back America Back to Life School of Medicine. We're going to take you into the hospital. We're going to take you into the OR. And I'm going to teach you how we treat the babies in the womb as patients. We're going to start off in our medical school session today with a little bit of Latin. And no, not Latin dancing. We're going to speak a little bit of Latin. And the phrase we're going to learn is primum non nocere. And we're having a little bit of, there we go. And what does that mean in Latin? It means first, do no harm. You are now in medical school. We are going to give you scalpels. We are going to give you needles, we're going to give you radiation, we're going to give you chemotherapy, which you will use to heal. But in this process, you will not do any harm. That is the first rule, prima non nocere. What's the second rule? The second rule is that patients have rights. All patients have rights. It's the first thing that we teach people when they come into medical school. Here in Ohio, you actually have a patient's bill of rights. This is how they list the patient's bill of rights. And it's very similar to New York's patient's bill of rights. New York is incredibly liberal, but this is New York's patient's bill of rights. And if you zoom in a little bit, you can say that if you are a patient, you have the right to not be discriminated based on race, color, religion, or sex, not to be discriminated based on your age. You will have a clean, safe environment. You will receive emergency care, and we will even provide a smoke-free environment for you if you meet the criteria of being a patient. Well, guess what? I was at the University of Florida College of Medicine, my alma mater, and we were talking about bioethics and patients' rights with the students. And I asked them, if I have a patient that is in my emergency room, and they need a blood transfusion, or they will die, do I have an obligation to provide them with a life-saving blood transfusion there in the ER? And the kids are all nodding their heads. I said, okay, I agree with you, but what if I have a patient in my emergency room that needs a life-saving blood transfusion, but this patient wasn't born in the United States? Do I still have an obligation to provide them with life-saving care and a blood transfusion to save their life? And the students were like, absolutely. One student in the back raised his hand and he goes, Dr. Lyle, we've been taught here at the University of Florida College of Medicine that a patient is a person, is entitled to respect and bodily integrity, and it doesn't matter if they were born in the United States. That's your patient and you need to treat them. And I said, I agree with you. They told me the same thing when I was here at the University of Florida. And just so you know, the patient in the emergency room that needed a life-saving blood transfusion, they received that blood transfusion even though they weren't born in the United States. Yet. And that is the key. I'm going to take you into the OR. We're going to go into the hospital. I'm going to show you the amazing ways that we are treating these patients in the womb. And we are not only treating and diagnosing, we are curing these babies in the womb. How many of y'all like pubs? Anybody like pubs? Yeah. Yeah, pubs are great, except this pubs is something a little bit different. It is a peri-umbilical blood sampling. We are giving life-saving blood transfusions to babies in the womb as early as 18 weeks gestation. They're not even halfway through. Remember when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. If your neighbor needed a unit of your blood to save their life, would you be willing to give your neighbor a unit of blood? Absolutely. We can use blood that you donated at the Red Cross, at a church event or a drive or at work, and we can transfuse that blood directly into the circulation of the baby and save that baby's life. How do you know a baby needs a blood transfusion? We can actually measure the speed of blood up in the baby's brain of the middle cerebral artery, and depending on how quickly those red cells are going through that artery, I can tell you if that baby is anemic. Well, why is the baby anemic and have a low blood count? Because from the moment of conception, the mom and the baby are different genetically. In fact, the mom is different from the baby. I mean, half the time, it's a different gender on the inside, all right? Because when we do tests, guess how many genders we get as far as options? We get two genders as far as the options, all right? But moms and babies not only can be different genders, moms and babies can have different blood types as well. And sometimes moms don't mean to, but they have developed antibodies. And these antibodies can cross the placenta and start to attack the baby's blood. It can drop so low that the babies will go into heart failure and the babies will die on the inside. Well, what do you do with a baby that's only 18 weeks along and is severely anemic? You can't deliver the baby and then give them a blood transfusion. We give them a blood transfusion in the womb. Well, do we just sort of tap their arm and kind of put a little rubber band on and give them a little IV of blood? No. We want the easy way, all right? We actually give a blood transfusion right through the umbilical vein, right through the umbilical cord. This is an animation. We've been blessed to find a great animator who does this kind of work for us. This is the baby that needs blood. The baby will die without this blood transfusion. We use an ultrasound. We will look at the baby on the inside with the ultrasound. And while we are looking, we have this donated blood, O negative blood, that one of you might have given to save your neighbor's life. And with ultrasound guidance, we will guide this needle through the skin of the mom, through the wall of the uterus, then we're going to go down to the umbilical cord. And the mom is the life support system of the baby. And everything the baby needs, it gets from the mom. Everything the baby wants to get rid of, it gets rid of through the placenta. So we'll guide this, and you can see the two arteries and the one vein. Arteries are going to the placenta to get the oxygen, and the vein is coming back with all the things that the baby needs. So you can see the blood flow. There's the needle. And with an ultrasound, we can easily guide it right into that umbilical vein. You'll see the vein go through the wall. The baby doesn't have enough blood cells. And from donated blood, we will pour blood cells that we've calculated the volume. We will pour that blood into the blood system, and we will save that baby's life. If we can do a life-saving blood transfusion to a baby in the womb at 18 weeks gestation, do they meet the criteria of being a patient? Absolutely. And a patient is a person, no matter how small. And it's like, wow, that's really cool. Can you do anything besides blood transfusions? Yeah, y'all are in medical school. We're going to have some fun. Any of y'all have any twins in here in the room? If you have twins, okay, boy, girl, one of each. You know what? I had a patient who said, well, they already delivered the babies, one boy, one girl, and then they came in for the two-week visit. And they said, well, what do you think? And I said, think about what? Do you think they're identical? I'm like, did you change a diaper yet? You know, it's like, no, they're not identical. But sometimes twins are identical, and sometimes not only are they sharing a womb, but they're actually sharing a placenta. So you can see on this example, you have a real big baby that is selfish, a little sinner in the womb, and this big baby is saying, when it comes to nutrition, this baby is saying, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. I want all of the nutrition. Meanwhile, this kid's getting the leftovers. You know, and so I've named them for illustrations. This one's Arnold. This is Danny. You remember the movie. And now you know what was really going on, all right? But when they're doing this, if we don't do something and teach them how to share, the little baby is going to die from a lack of nutrition. And if the little baby dies and they're sharing a placenta, then the big baby is going to die. We send all of our patients, and it is done at centers all around the country. We send our patients down to Texas Children's Hospital in Houston, Texas. And what do? They will teach them how to share in the womb. Do they counsel them on how to share? No. They have Dr. Luke Skywalker. Dr. Luke Skywalker will go into the womb with his lightsaber. He will take the lightsaber and right down the middle of the placenta. He will say, all right, Arnold, this is your side of the placenta. Danny, this is your side of the placenta. You are twins. You two play nice. I mean, your kids always shared everything perfectly, though, right? Yeah, right. You know, we are sinners on the inside of the womb, I guarantee you. So how do we actually do this? We used to show the real surgery, and it's really cool, but guess what? People were passing out. So we're going to show you a 3D animation on how we actually do this. So you're going to, but our difference is we're going to put the camera inside the womb to start off with. So it's like you pop the GoPro here in the bottom of the womb, and the camera has now gone through the skin of the mother, through the wall of the uterus. We turn a light on, and the kids have never seen light before. And they go, Arnold, what do you see? What's going on? And the scope will come down. They will then map out all the blood vessels here on the surface of the placenta. They'll activate the laser, and one vessel at a time, they will divide that placenta in two. This is your 50%. This is your 50%. They will keep them at Texas Children's Hospital for 10 days. Then they send them back to us in Pensacola. We'll follow them for the rest of their pregnancy. We might have sent them down at the 99th percentile in the first or second percentile. When we deliver them at term, they are usually like 60, 40, 70, 30. We have saved the lives of these babies by teaching them how to share on the inside of the womb, by taking a laser and dividing the placenta in two. Is that treating them as a patient? Absolutely. And a patient is a person, no matter how small. How many of you remember this picture? Yeah, it was, I'm going to make you feel old, 1999. That was 25 years ago. Vanderbilt University was doing a study where they were randomizing babies who were diagnosed with a defect in their spine called spina bifida. And they were surgically going in the womb, and they were remaking the repair. They stopped the trial. You want to know why they stopped the trial? Because the evidence was very clear that the babies that had the procedure done in the womb, as opposed to having it done after they delivered, the babies in the womb were doing a lot better. And ethically, it was not proper to know that information and allow some babies to have a less chance of survival and good outcome. So they stopped the trial and said, hey, we got enough information. It is better to treat them on the inside of the womb. This was a little baby that a guy named Michael Clancy took this picture, and Samuel, I mean, they're operating on the back. They're not operating on the hand, but Samuel kind of stuck his hand out, grabbed the surgeon's hand, you know, kind of like, you're not shaky, right? Because you're operating on my spine here, you know, no alcohol this morning, you know? And so Samuel stuck his hand out, grabbed the physician's hand, they tucked the hand back in, and then they made the repair of the defect on Samuel's spine. You know, so was Samuel. Here in this picture, I got to meet Samuel here at Georgia Right to Life, which I know y'all are in the house. I got to meet Samuel at Georgia Right to Life, and he says, can I get my picture with you? I said, sure, what's your name? He goes, I'm Samuel Armas. You use my picture all the time. And his mom comes up, and she goes, yeah, everybody wants to meet Samuel. She goes, that is my uterus, that is my ovary, that is my fallopian tube, but nobody wants to get my picture. Everybody wants to get Samuel's picture. And there's a more updated picture of Samuel. Is Samuel a patient there? Yeah. Was he a patient there? Was he a patient there? Yes. And a patient is a person, no matter how small. That was generation one. If you have an original iPhone, you need to update it because they've changed the iPhone. So if we have a generation one of spina bifida surgery, we now have a second generation spina bifida surgery, where instead of opening up the womb surgically, we can actually place a fetoscope on the inside. I won't show you that procedure, but I want to show you the life that we are saving on the inside of the womb. This is a fetoscope. We've actually made an incision in the mom's belly, and we brought the uterus out, and we're popping this scope in because it is a lot less invasive and a lot easier to do this way. And you can see that is the baby on the inside of the womb. This is better than ultrasound, better than 3D ultrasound. That is a baby, that is our patient. And they are going to repair the defect on this baby's spine. And these babies, long-term, are doing better. They can, when we take the initiative and we treat them as a patient on the inside of the womb, and then we follow them years later, the babies on the inside that got their surgery, they can go upstairs faster, downstairs faster. They have better control of their bladders, better control of their bowels. If we can improve the quality of life for the rest of their lives, that is a good thing. So now we are doing this routinely at centers around the country. But if there's a zone one and a zone two, we got to have a zone three. We've now progressed even more, and that is over at UC Davis is conducting a trial called the CURE trial, being led by Dr. Diane Farmer. What is the CURE trial? They are using stem cells. Now, stem cells, you think, well, that's bad, right? No. What's the source of the stem cells? Were the stem cells coming from abortions? They started that. What do you think God said about that idea? He said, uh-uh, and it didn't work. Their thought was if we apply stem cells to the spinal defect, these stem cells will then say, now I know what I'm supposed to be in life, and they would develop normal tissue. When they tried it with the aborted tissue that was stem cells, it didn't work. So what did they try next? They harvested stem cells from a placenta and from the cord of a baby that was already delivered. Well, what's a stem cell? A stem cell is called a totipotential cell. It has the potential to become anything. It's kind of like we've got a lot of youth here. You know, you look at the kids that were here last night. What is a five-year-old going to be when they grow up? Well, they just need some guidance and direction and structure. You know, they might become a politician, might become a doctor, might become a pastor. Who knows? When we apply stem cells to a defect in the spine, these stem cells have been sitting around going, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And all of a sudden you put them on abnormal spinal tissue and they go, now I know, I've got my guidance. I'm going to be spinal tissue. I'm going to be spinal nerves and tissue. And they start to grow and regenerate right there on the defect. It's called the cure trial because they don't think they have just a treatment for spina bifida. They really think they have a cure for spina bifida. So we're going to take you into the OR. We're going to take you into the womb. I'm going to show you how they are doing this at UC Davis. Mom is there. Baby's on the inside. Baby's been diagnosed with spina bifida in the womb. They have taken the stem cells. They have harvested them. This is the actual spinal cord. That is the nerves there in yellow. So mom has anesthesia. They make an incision in her belly. It's easier as a cartoon, right? And then they make an incision in the fascia, make an incision in the womb, and now they have access. The fluid comes out, but now they have access to the defect in the baby's spine. They'll have the nerve, and of course, this is what's going to control everything for the baby, you know, as far as legs, arms, and bowel function. They will loosen up the skin. They will then loosen up the dura, the layer around. They will free that up. And then they will start to introduce the nerves actually into the arachnoid sheath. And then they'll stitch that up. They'll close the dura up. But before they do that, they apply a little patch that has these stem cells that are saying, put me in, coach. I know what I want to be. Just give me some guidance and direction. They'll apply these stem cells right there. They'll then close up that dura over top. And immediately the stem cell says, now I know what I'm going to be when I grow up. And they start to regenerate new tissue. They'll then close the skin, close the uterus, close the mom's skin, and then they'll deliver the baby. They are having babies that were not moving their legs, not moving their feet, and then just shortly after they've applied these stem cells in the womb, you can see these babies moving their legs and moving their feet. This is an example. That is Dr. Farmer. That is little baby Robbie, and that is Emily. That was one of the first trials. That baby is now moving his feet, has good control of his bladder and bowels because they took the initiative and they clearly treated him as a patient in the womb. And a patient is a person, no matter how small. And it's like, well, it can't get cooler than that. Oh, yeah. Any of y'all have a heart condition where you take a heart medication for like heart rate? All right. A lot of people are here. There's a medication called adenosine. Adenosine is a miracle drug. When you have a heart rate in an adult called supraventricular tachycardia, the heart rate might be 180, 200 on the adult. Well, if you keep pumping like that, the heart's going to go into failure. And it's going to go, no mas, I cannot keep up at this rate. So what do? One of the medicines we can give for supraventricular tachycardia is adenosine. Adenosine is a medication that we push as an IV. It's fast acting, but it doesn't last long. What does it do? It stops the patient's heart. I mean, that heart is cruising along at 180, and it'll go boop, and they are flatlined, and they are clinically dead for 5 seconds. When you give this as an intern or as a resident, they need to have an EKG on the doctor because you see your patient's heart stop, and you're like, come on, come on, and it kicks in every time. You know, everything gets a chance to depolarize, reset, and the heart rate comes back. We are now doing that for babies in the womb. It used to be when we had a baby that had a real fast heart rate, we would give the moms lots of medication, but is that really good for the mom? No. I mean, mom's getting beta block. We're hoping some of that medication crosses to the baby. And then we said, well, why don't we just inject some medication into the fluid around the baby? And maybe the baby will swallow it. Not a real accurate way of dosing medications. It would be like applying your medication to your bathtub and then kind of just sort of swallowing some of it or something. So what do? They take this exact medication and we're injecting it right into the umbilical vein and the umbilical cord, the same way we're doing blood transfusions. This is one of my favorite animations because there's so much going on. You're going to see the EKG of the baby. You're going to see the ultrasound of the baby's heart. And then you're going to see the injection of the medication. So with this animation, let's kick it in. We're going back into the OR and you can see there's mom, there's baby. All right, mom is just doesn't even need any anesthesia. They use the ultrasound to look at the baby's heart. And you can not only hear the baby's heartbeat clicking along at 270 beats per minute, you can see it just almost fibrillating there. The baby is going to go into heart failure and her baby is going to die. So we use the ultrasound to guide the needle right into the umbilical vein. We're going to inject this medication. We're going back into the vein, though. So instead of blood cells, we inject the adenosine. It gets in this stream. It goes right on up. And you'll see it going through the umbilical cord, go right up to the baby's heart, flatline. We just stop that baby's heart. Everything is now depolarizing and resetting. When it kicks back in there, we're at a normal rate. So if we can use advanced cardiac medications and treat the baby in the womb and correct a condition called supraventricular tachycardia, is that treating the baby as a patient? Yeah, and a patient is a person, no matter how small. And guess what? They just did something at Cleveland which is going to blow your socks off. All right, this is a baby that on ultrasound was diagnosed with a condition called a teratoma, or if, as Arnold would say, a teratoma. All right, so they had a teratoma. What's a teratoma? It's a tumor in the baby's heart. And this tumor was growing so quickly that if they didn't do something, this tumor was going to stop the function of the baby's heart. The baby was only 27 weeks along. So option number one was we can deliver your baby, and then the baby can have open-heart surgery. But now we have a 27-week preemie that just had open-heart surgery and is struggling to breathe on the outside. And they said, well, what are the other options? I said, well, we think we have the team and we have the technology where we can do open-heart surgery on your baby on the inside, close everything back up, and then deliver the baby later on in the pregnancy. They said, you think you can do that? They said, yes. So that's what they did. When you look at the Cleveland Clinic, this is from their website. They used to say that we're maternal fetal care. They've dropped the whole maternal word, because their focus is on the baby. And there's nothing wrong with the term fetus. It just means little one. So they are saying our patients are the fetal care center. In fact, even the operating rooms, they refer to them as the fetal operating room. Not the children's OR, not the maternal OR, the fetal OR. They recognize and they know their patients are these babies in the womb, and they are curing these babies on the inside. This is an ultrasound. Of course, you can pick out the teratoma. It's there with the big magnifying glass on it. But this is the tumor. This is an ultrasound of the baby's chest. You can see a lung here, a lung here. Here's the heart. This big goomba here on the heart, that's the teratoma. That is what is growing so quickly that it is blocking the function of the heart. This is what needs to be removed. This is the team that did that surgery. 36 doctors, nurses, anesthesiologists, and techs that treated these two patients on the inside of the womb. This is healthcare at Cleveland Clinic at the highest level. Abortion is not healthcare. You know, despite what Bernie Sanders and our president say, abortion is not healthcare. In this situation, a mom and a baby with a heartbeat both went into the operating room, and a mom with a baby with a heartbeat walked out of that room. What happens with an abortion? A mom and a baby with a heartbeat go in. Who comes out? A mom with a heartbeat, because the baby has been killed on the inside of the womb. If you are losing the lives of half of your patients, that is not healthcare. This is healthcare. I'm going to walk you through this. One of the most amazing key points on this is when you're getting procedures, do you get anesthesia? Sure, we don't want you to feel pain. But guess what? The baby had its own anesthesiologist. They are going to have an epidural for the mom so the mom is comfortable. They're going to make an incision in the mom's skin, make an incision in her uterus, just like having a C-section. Bring out the right hand, bring out the left hand. But before they do the heart surgery on the baby, they're actually going to have a pediatric anesthesiologist start an IV in the baby's hand. The baby is giving fluids, also giving fentanyl, a narcotic for pain, and a paralytic called Norcuron, so the baby wasn't, you know, making it difficult on the cardiothoracic surgeons. Let's walk you through this animation, because this is stunning. This is a patient, and they are a person, no matter how small. Here's that baby on the inside of the womb, and you can see the heart, and we're going to zoom in just a second. But this is a patient, and this is a patient. Zoom in on the heart. This golf ball-looking thing, that is the teratoma that is growing, and it is affecting the functioning. So mom has her epidural. She's comfortable. OB makes an incision in mom's skin, makes an incision in her uterus, and then brings out the baby's hands. When they bring out the baby's hands, they cue the pediatric anesthesiologist. The pediatric anesthesiologist starts an IV in the baby's hand, and they're giving the baby fluids and pain medicine and a paralytic. Now they cue the cardiothoracic team. They make an incision in the baby's chest, open up the baby's chest. They remove the teratoma from the baby's heart, remove that tumor. Heart starts saying, thank you very much, and it starts functioning normally. They close the baby's chest, remove the IV, tuck the hands in, close the uterus, close the skin. That was at 27 weeks gestation. When did they deliver that baby? 37 weeks gestation. If we can do open heart surgery and have a special anesthesiologist for the baby on the inside, is that baby a patient? Absolutely. I guess that's the end. Guys, I have no screen, no projection at all. The next slide, I'm going to actually show you a picture of the baby during the surgery. Everything has gone dead here. You know, Satan is the prince of the power of the air. And as soon as we went wireless, you know, so let me just back up. Satan takes, you know, we go to conventions all, we get, you know, 10,000 people at some of these big stadiums. They go, no, we never have a problem with our audiovisual. You get an effective message, which is teaching people how to defend God's preborn. Guess what? You know, evil powers kick in. So this is actually that baby's hand getting that IV established, and they are giving that baby medication. That's the baby right after surgery. You say, well, where's that big incision? You can barely see it because the baby spent 10 weeks on the inside developing and healing, and you really can't see much of a scar on that baby's chest, even though that baby has had open heart surgery. That is that baby. That is baby Ryland. He is a patient there. He has value. A patient is a person, no matter how small. And it's like people say, well, you're doing blood transfusions, you're giving medication, heart surgery, but I mean, it's not like you're doing brain surgery or something. Well, guess what? We're doing brain surgery now and the baby's on the inside. So yes, we are doing brain procedures and surgeries on the baby. This is a case at Boston Children's Hospital. The baby was diagnosed with something called a Galen malformation. Well, what's a Galen malformation? When we diagnose this on babies in the womb with ultrasound, half of these kids right after delivery are going to get really sick. And of the kids that get sick, half of those patients are going to die shortly after delivery. Well, what's the problem? The problem is that here in the brain, this is a high-pressure artery. This is a low-pressure vein. There's a connection between the two, and there should not be a connection. So you can see this is turning into an aneurysm and just swelling up real big because the vein's like, I'm not meant to take pressure. All this pressure is hurting me. And so a fourth of these babies will die. Well, they used to repair it on the outside, but then they realized they can't get it done quickly enough. So one of the doctors over at Boston Children's Hospital says, why don't we just fix it while they're on the inside? That's what they did. So we're going to walk you through this. How do they do that? Mom had anesthesia. Mom was comfortable. And they actually, with ultrasound guidance, they gave a little bit of anesthesia to the baby so the baby wouldn't feel any pain. And you'll do fine with this. But they actually will guide a needle with ultrasound. It's going to go through the skin, through the wall of the uterus, right into the back of the baby's skull, going towards this Galen malformation. And they're going to put stents in here to block the blood flow. You know, so the needle is going through. We're going to remove all the brain tissue. Here's the aneurysm. We need to block this connection right there. So they place these coils, just like they would do on the outside, but they place these coils. It's Trump saying, we need to build a wall. So they're going to build a wall right here on the inside. They go coil number one, coil number two, coil number three, and they are building a wall to block that connection between the artery and the vein, and they are, you know, rendering the Galen malformation not there anymore. Once they obliterate that, they pull the needle out, and then they can deliver the baby, and when the baby makes that adjustment to being on the outside, the babies are doing great. When it comes to which baby had this procedure, that's baby Denver. You know, baby Denver had brain surgery done on the inside of the womb. Is baby Denver a patient there? Yeah. Was baby Denver a patient on the inside? Yes, patients have rights, and a patient is a person no matter how small. And clearly, we are treating the preborn as patients in the womb. Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who works for CNN, the Catholic News Network, right? Christian News Network, Conservative News Network, no, the regular CNN. Dr. Sanjay Gupta is a neurosurgeon. He's a gifted, smart guy. He heard about this, and he was fascinated about this. So he did a report, and he wanted to interview the doctor. Because he's like, this is mind-blowing that we are doing brain surgery, neurosurgery on babies on the inside. I want you to listen to the audio. There's a key phrase that Sanjay Gupta says, and I want you to pick up.
In utero surgery also means they had to take two patients to the operating room instead of...
What did Sanjay just say? What I've been saying for years. He said they had to take...
In utero surgery also means they had to take two patients to the operating room instead of one.
Patients have
And they
rights.
Had to then very carefully thread a catheter right into the middle of that gigantic blood vessel inside a very tiny baby brain.
You didn't see, yeah, tiny baby. You didn't think that CNN was pro-life, did you? But guess what? I saw that report and I said, I'm using that one. He said that they take two patients to the operating room. Definition of a patient for all medical students, and you are now in medical school this morning. A patient is a person receiving medical treatment. Did we just prove to you that we are providing medical treatment for babies in the womb? Yes. Categorically, yes. But if they are a person receiving medical treatment, so a patient is a person, and according to the 14th Amendment, nor shall any state deny any person of life, liberty, or property without due process. So look at that list. Patients are persons, and they deserve protection. And that is what we are here to convince our legislatures that this is what the right thing to do, and that patients have rights. Patients have rights, but the government does not give you your rights. Our rights come from God. It is the duty of good government to defend those rights that were given to us all by God. Yet despite these amazing medical advances and us doing all these procedures for babies in the womb, we still had over 111,000 people die of drug overdoses last year in the United States. Most were narcotics, and the number one narcotic for death was fentanyl. Does everybody who makes a bad decision and overdoses on a narcotic die? No. Because we have an antidote, and that antidote is called Narcan. Narcan's an amazing drug. I mean, you'll have somebody who overdosed, they're not breathing, they're unconscious, you can't even rub them and sternal rub them and get them awake. You give them a shot of Narcan, you give them nasal spray of Narcan, they wake up like Sleeping Beauty, y'all. So we can save those lives by giving them the antidote. But that's not the only evil when it comes to, you know, here in the United States, fentanyl and narcotics, which are streaming over our southern border. We have another evil, and that's the abortion pill. The abortion pill is 98% effective in killing the baby in the womb up to 10 weeks gestation. 98% of the time when the mom makes the wrong decision, that baby will die on the inside of the womb. 54% of all the abortions in the United States are now performed with the abortion pill. A lot of the times it's delivered, you know, through the mail system, and a lot of times, you know, it even comes in from outside of the country. 98% effective in killing that baby in the womb. That is, if you think, well, we have a million abortions a year, we have over 500,000 of those abortions are being performed with the abortion pill. Did you see the news this week? Who are the new dispensers of the abortion pill when a person comes in there with a prescription? CVS and Walgreens. Am I going to participate in providing business to CVS and Walgreens anymore? No. Because they say, we're legal, we will provide the abortion pill, and we will assist in taking the lives of these babies on the inside of the womb. What are the risks? How does this work? It works because it blocks a very important hormone, and that hormone is called progesterone. Progesterone is the conductor of pregnancy. Progesterone says, oh my gosh, we have a positive pregnancy test. We got to do a whole different thing. We need to divert more nutrition to the baby. Uterus, you need to relax. You're not going to contract. We're going to allow this baby to grow. Mom, we're going to give you a little bit more of an appetite. You might want to eat a little bit more because we're growing a second person on the inside. Are there risks? Yeah, 98% of the time the babies die. My patients on the inside die 98% of the time. Are there risks to the moms? Yeah. The number one pregnancy-related cause of death in the United States statistically is still a ruptured ectopic pregnancy. When a woman has a positive pregnancy test, it says there's a pregnancy. Does it say where the pregnancy is? No. 1% of the time, statistically, that new pregnancy will be ectopic. It'll be a tubal pregnancy. And it'll be somewhere else other than in the uterus. So when a person receives the abortion pill, they will tell her, you're going to have bleeding, you're going to have cramping, and you're going to have pain. Well, what are the symptoms of a rupturing ectopic pregnancy? Bleeding, cramping, and pain. How are they supposed to know the difference? That's why we're going before the U.S. Supreme Court to say when we are mail ordering this, women are getting hurt, women are dying, they're dying of ectopic pregnancies which were not, you know, diagnosed. So there are risks. Are there regrets that patients have? Guys, have you ever said anything that you regret? Have you ever done anything that you regret? I mean, yeah, I'm a guy too. You know, I've said things, I'm like, that was stupid, Bill. Why did you do that? Ladies, has your husband ever said something that was just so stupid that you're thinking, why the heck did he say that? Yeah, I mean, we're sinners saved by grace. But do people have regrets after they've taken the abortion pill? Yeah, we get calls all the time. I've gotten calls from 19 different moms who had regrets, and we've administered the antidote to these moms, and we have successfully delivered 15 out of those 19 moms. We all make mistakes. Progesterone is the hormone that is being attacked. Look, it's a big word. So what do you do when you have a big word? You break it up into little words. Progesterone is a progestational steroid hormone. It keeps the pregnancy going. The abortion pill blocks the hormone progesterone. So if progesterone levels were going up, take the abortion pill, and the progesterone levels are going down, well, what do? We We just bring the progesterone levels. This is not rocket science. We have progesterone levels that are going down. We give the mom progesterone, the same bioidentical, exact same progesterone secreted and developed from yams and soybeans, and we give that to the mom. And we use this medication in pregnancy all the time. In vitro fertilization, moms didn't know they were going to get pregnant. They get progesterone. Somebody got pregnant, like my wife and I. We got pregnant and had a miscarriage. Pregnant and had a miscarriage. What was wrong? We had what's called a luteal phase defect, where we weren't making enough progesterone. So with those moms, we give them the exact same doses, the exact same medication. So when we get a call through our hotline, we now have trained over 500 doctors, which are on our panel. And I'm one of the doctors who, you know, works with abortionpillreversal.com as far as providing this medication. Just last month, we had documented successful reversal number 5,000 babies. You know, that is amazing when we can do that. So if you block the progesterone, we just give them progesterone. You want to learn more about the science? We don't have time. We have talks on the science. Go to aprscience.org. You can see all the science that you need to understand how we are saving the lives of these babies. This is the first successful abortion pill reversal that I had. How much does it cost? $109. If you've got a 65% chance of saving the life of a baby for $109, anybody here willing to drop $109? Absolutely. My wife and I pay for all the reversals that we attempt. It's the right thing to do. Pastors, priests, any here today? All right, we got a lot. I've got Sunday covered for you, all right? Because look at this. You had a mom who made a bad choice, and this baby is on a 98% path that this baby is going to be dead. What do? We spend $109 and we buy back the life of that baby. Buy back. What's the spiritual word for that, to buy back? Redeemed. We are redeeming the life of that baby for $109. How does that translate to Sunday morning? 100% of us were on the path of eternal separation and death. But what happens for us when we recognize that we need a Savior? We are bought back and we are redeemed, not with $109 worth of progesterone, but with the blood of Jesus Christ. That is what redemption is. Grandma sent me a picture of that baby. Baby's name is called Journey because this baby was on a heck of a journey. That is Journey starting kindergarten in Mobile, Alabama this summer in her little pink and purple outfit. 98% of the time she was not going to be alive, yet Journey is alive and attending kindergarten. When we save a baby, we are saving a lifetime. And that is the key. This is going to be a normal, healthy person. This is one of the most recent reversals. You know, mom and dad made a mistake. They took the abortion pill. Mom had horrible regrets, called us for help. What did David say last night? I can help you. We said, yes, we can help her. We gave her the antidote. We gave her the progesterone. And I delivered that baby that had a 98% chance of dying. What did they name that baby? Bazinga. What's my first name? William. You know, what does William mean? It means the bold protector. So I'm doing my best to be a bold protector for these preborn. But guess who came in to visit me this week? I mean, this was great timing for y'all. Who came in to visit? That's William. That's me with my picture with William. Why did they come into the office? Because guess who's pregnant again with another baby, you know? So that is a beautiful family that is together as a family of four with me. And that is, I mean, I've delivered 4,000 babies, I mean, triplets, quadruplets, but when I get to hold and deliver a baby that had a 98% chance of dying, yet with a lot of prayer and some science and some medicine, we were able to save that life, that's one of the coolest things you can do in medicine. If you like free stuff, we've got some Sanctity of Life videos. Go visit my wife, and my wife is a real pretty lady over here in the green. We'll be here until we have to leave for the airport. She'll be over there in our booth, which is kind of over that way. But these are in English, Spanish, covering a lot of the same things for Sanctity of Life Sunday. Do you have to wait to use it for Sanctity of Life Sunday? Do you wait to share the story of the resurrection and the, you know, and the gift of salvation and the gospel? Do you have to wait until Easter Sunday to do that? No, you can share that anytime. Same thing with this information. This is a spiritual battle. This is not just right and wrong. This is a spiritual battle. It's not a choice. So we better be going in with our prayer. We better be going with our scripture. And we're just going to touch on some of the scriptural points. Genesis 1:26. Billions of galaxies, billions of stars, little bit of extra time on the earth, all the mountains, all the rivers, all the streams, all the rivers, all the valleys, all the mammals, all the birds, all the fish. And then God said, hold on, y'all. Genesis 1:26. And God said, let us make man in our image. Nothing else had been created in the image of God until that moment. And every one of you was not created in the image of God at the moment of conception. You were created in the image, at the moment of your delivery on your birthday. You were created in the image of God at the moment of your conception. Why did I pop the American flag up? Well, I didn't know that you were going to have a beautiful American flag up here for me. You ever seen somebody burn the stars and stripes? Why did they do that? If you hate the United States, you want to destroy the image which represents the United States. At its core foundation, what is abortion? The baby in the womb represents the image of God. If you hate God, you want to destroy that image of God. That's why this is a spiritual battle that we need to engage in. When are we created in the image of God? It's right here at the moment of conception. And I'm going to show you conception, and it's okay, even with all the kids here. I'm going to show you the beauty of conception. Ladies, you are so elegant and efficient. You make a little cyst on your ovary, and you go, boop, and that little egg comes floating on down, gets picked up by the fimbria of the fallopian tube, who guide it towards it, and in the middle of the fallopian tube, then we have the guys. We're not efficient. When it comes to the guys, it will take 200 million, 300 million of our little swimmers who all think they're Michael Phelps, and I'm going to be the gold medalist here. And they start swimming, and they are doing their best. Some of them aren't real bright, and they're just swimming around in circles, and they're not going to get anywhere. They go through the cervix, go up to the uterus, and they got a choice. They go, guys, do I go east or do I go west? Do I go left tube or right tube? We still don't ask for directions. Yes, why don't you just pull over and ask for directions? Well, we don't, because since we were sperm, we just don't do that sort of thing. So half of them go to their left tube, and they get there, and they go, there's no egg. You know, meanwhile, the others go, there's the egg, and now they're swimming even faster. They're swimming faster. They all want to be the gold medalist. They get to the egg, but it's more of a multitasking. It's not just who touches the wall first, who gets on the inside. They have enzymes on the acrosome of the top of their heads as they're swimming, and finally one of them gets on the inside. When one gets on the inside, if we get a silver medalist in there, guess what? That pregnancy is not going to be compatible with life because there's too much genetic material. So how does God keep the silver medalist, the bronze medalist, and the other 200 million swimmers from getting in? There is a shield that goes up immediately. That is called the zona pellucida. When that first sperm gets on the inside and that zona pellucida shield goes up, just like in Star Trek, shields up. You can actually, if you look with the right frequency of light, you can see a flash of light going on right there. There's depolarization of zinc ions, potassium ions, all making this rigid wall that says, we have our gold medalist. The rest of you are losers. Go home. And then all of a sudden we have that genetic material. That one cell is unique from mom, unique from dad, unique from the other 7 billion people on the planet. And that one cell divides into 2, then to 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. And then one cell will say, you know what, I don't want to be an exact copy of you. I don't want to be just like you. I've got all these blueprints, but I'm only going to read these pages. I'm going to start the entire cardiovascular system from here now. When I divide, we're going to lay out the heart, and all the arteries, and all the veins. Another cell says, you know what, we can do that. We can do our own thing. I'm going to start the entire skeletal system. And another cell says, I'm going to start the entire GI system. I can tell you what happens on day 16, and I can tell you what happens on day 17. How do individual cells know what pages of the DNA that they're supposed to read? They all have the same blueprints. How do they know what pages of the blueprints to read? It's called cell differentiation. We don't understand it, but I can tell you, when you have a design like that, there was a designer, and that is Almighty God. Who agrees with me? This is the Alabama State Supreme Court. Everybody on the Alabama State Supreme Court agrees with me. Except for this guy named Justice Greg Cook. Alabama State Supreme Court last week had a case before them where there was the death of a bunch of frozen embryos. And Alabama has lots of laws which protect children. Well, what did Alabama say regarding embryos? Little babies frozen at between 80 and 120 cells between 5 and 7 days since conception. The Alabama State Supreme Court said, dominantly, everybody except for Justice Cook, they said, children equal embryos. And if we have embryos that are dying, that is wrong, and they are protected under Alabama law because they are children as well. Getting back to Scripture, Jeremiah 1:5. God's talking to Jeremiah. God says, Jeremiah, before I formed thee in the womb, I knew you. Before you came forth out of the womb, I sanctified you, I set you apart, and I ordained you to be a prophet unto the nations. Did God have a role for Jeremiah to perform for the kingdom? Yes. And when did he assign that role? While he was still on the inside. God had a relationship with Jeremiah. God had a relationship with all of you while still on the inside of the womb. Psalm 139, 13 and 14. Did the psalmist know about cell differentiation and all these amazing changes? No. The psalmist knew there was a night of romance, and then all of a sudden a baby came out 9 months later. And the psalmist says, God, you form my inmost being. You knit me in my mother's womb. I praise you so wonderfully. You made me. We call it cell differentiation. It was just being knit together on our mother's womb. Can we win? This is a spiritual battle. Yes. And we need to start winning in the church. Lifeway did a survey 2 years ago, and they found that of the people that were regularly attending church, between 18 and 24% of the men and the women had personally been involved with an abortion. They need to hear the truth. These men and women are hurting. They need healing. Healing comes through forgiveness, and true forgiveness only comes through Christ through the message of the gospel. This is not just a problem outside the church. We need to be hearing this message. We need to be hearing this information from our pulpits. When it comes to saving lives, Romans 5:8, but God showed us his love in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. I mean, just a little random survey. Maybe we can do a monkey survey on this one, too. Besides me and my wife, any other sinners in the room? I mean, raise your hand. Wow, sometimes I get one or two. Y'all are honest. I appreciate that. God loved you all so much that he sent his son. He lived a perfect life. He gave his life on the cross. He was dead, not just merely dead, really most sincerely dead for 3 days. He conquered death and he rose again. An amazing gift to all of us. But guess what? When were you a sinner? Psalm 51:5 says, surely I was sinful at birth. I was sinful from the time my mother conceived me. So if God did all of that for all sinners, yet we were sinners from the moment of conception, do the sinners in the womb deserve our support and defense and protection? Absolutely, yes. Can we win this battle? Who wants to play a game when you can't win? Yeah, we can win. Y'all have had a little bit of a setback, but we're going to give you some encouragement today. You know, we are winning this battle when you look around the country. I spoke at, in Tallahassee. That's our capital of Florida. You know, when I started my practice, we had a gestational age cap of 24 weeks. We brought it down to 15 weeks. I spoke in Tallahassee. That night, the House passed a heartbeat bill. And then 2 weeks later, the Senate passed a heartbeat bill. It was then signed into law by Governor Ron DeSantis. We are having victories. We just have to provide you with these tools so that you can have victory, too. But you know what? We have a new threat to the babies on the inside of the womb. It's called Floridians Protecting Freedom. It's like, what? It sounds something good. I mean, we're the home of the Blue Angels in Pensacola, Florida. I've delivered 5 of their babies, and I haven't gotten a ride yet. You think Floridians Protecting Freedom is something that's going to help our veterans or something like that? No. If you're trying to figure out the motivation, follow the money trail. Who's this supported by? The ACLU of Florida and Planned Parenthood are dumping tens of millions of dollars.
You've been listening to Dr. William Lyle, a doctor and educator passionate about the personhood of the unborn and presenter at the 2024 Bringing America Back to Life convention. Thank you all for joining me this evening. As I say good night and God bless each and every one of you, I'd like to close with the words of the Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel. There may be times when we are powerless to prevent injustice, but there must never be a time when we fail to protest.
From the Median is listener supported. Visit our website, fromthemedian.org, for further information or to make a donation to continue to make this radio program possible. Email us, radionews@fromthemedian.org, or call 440-668-4049. Through our fromthemedian.org website, you can download this or previous programs for your listening pleasure or sign up to receive our weekly preview of upcoming guest interviews. Tune in every weeknight at the same time to listen to another great interview on From the Median as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life.
This program has been sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.